Those talks aimed at restoring power sharing in Northern Ireland, they are expected to resume today. The British and Irish governments had been holding talks with parties, but they paused over the Christmas holidays. You've heard from her already, our political correspondent, Jane McCormick. Jane, that deadline we should mention as well. The parties have until the 13th of January to broker a deal. Then what could happen?
Yeah, they've got until Monday week, effectively. And then really, the other option that we're being told is on the table is that Julian Smith, the Secretary of State, has to call a fresh assembly election. At that point, he's got no alternative. And it's worth remembering, I suppose, that in the past, previous secretaries of state have put deadlines in place and those have been broken. And they'd said, well, you know, at this point, we might have to call an assembly election. The reason why they didn't have to do that was then they were able to go to Westminster and pass a law called the Northern Ireland Executive Bill, which effectively pushed back the deadline and kept civil servants in charge of running the place and allowed them to take decisions without too much pushback. Julian Smith, this time, though, Vinnie, is saying that that is not going to happen. He doesn't want to bring another piece of legislation through Westminster. And that is why he seems to be so fixated on this deadline of the 13th of January.
What about the general election before Christmas? What impact will that have? Will that be in the back of the minds of our politicians?
I mean, I think so. I think you could tell even after the election on the 12th of December that come the following Monday, the parties were straight back in there. Clearly, the DUP and Sinn Féin, who had the kind of the biggest losses and defeats over the course of that election, they both saw their vote share decline fairly significantly, were keen to get back in and say they wanted to make Stormont work, rather than the line the DUP had been saying before was that, you know, if there is no return to devolution, there needs to be direct rule in place. Those kinds of arguments seem to have gone away. Similarly, Sinn Féin, even before the new year, Mary Lou McDonald, its president, was saying that come January it needs to be a deal or an election. So you can see that they have both shifted their lines to try and make this kind of navigation back into Stormont a little bit more smooth, given that we are also approaching the 3-year anniversary without Stormont. That is next week, the 9th of January.
Of course, those lines, that the red lines, they still do exist. Before Christmas, the blame for where the talks didn't get to was placed at the DUP, reference to the petition of concern, for example, and the Irish Language Act. So there's still issues there.
Of course there are. Not much has changed, I suppose. The issues haven't gone away. What we are being led to believe is that the negotiations on the Irish language between the DUP and Sinn Féin and the two governments have been kept fairly tight. We're not entirely clear what it is they have agreed, although some commentators have suggested that an Irish Language Act is all but done in the way that it was back in February 2018. They just haven't decided what they want to call it yet. The real bone of contention appears to have been the reform of the petition of concern. And we had Naomi Long, the Alliance leader, on Good Morning Ulster this morning. She was making the point that the three smaller parties, her party, the SDLP and the Ulster Unionists, had put forward reforms and proposals around this that Sinn Féin appears willing to back, sign up to. And before Christmas, it was the DUP who appeared resistant to that. And that then led to this really unusual move, actually, of both Julian Smith and Simon Coveney coming out that week before Christmas and effectively singling out and blaming the DUP for not agreeing to it. I suppose, on the other hand, you can look at it from the DUP's point of view and say, well, look, they've been burned by the British government before, let down by Boris Johnson over Brexit. So perhaps they are right to say they want to wait until they see more of a text before agreeing to anything.
We mentioned the Irish Language Act there. How will the DUP sell that to their voters?
I don't know. It's a good question. You might want to ask whoever you get on from the DUP about that, because they will know better than I will. But clearly, it has been a huge issue for them over the past few years, to the point that in 2018, it looked like they really couldn't go back into government because unionist grassroots were so angry about it. If you remember back even a year before that, when we had the first assembly election, feels like a long time ago now. But it was then DUP leader Arlene Foster who'd come out and said, you know, we'll never accede to an Irish Language Act. She used the phrase crocodiles, which then really picked up a lot of momentum and increased the campaign for an Irish Language Act. It's been a really divisive issue, but I think on the other side of this, there are a lot of people who are saying, when you consider next week we're going to have potentially more strikes by nurses, the healthcare sector seems to be in crisis, Brexit is meant to be happening at the end of the month. Really, it's time to get back in. I think the parties will be very aware of all of that going into these talks.
And of course, the RHI report, which is due in the not so distant future.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've been told that for quite some time now. I think Sir Patrick Coughlin, the chair of the inquiry, only he will know and decide when he wants to publish that. We had been told to expect it sometime in the new year, and the parties will know that as well. But remember, Sinn Féin had previously already gotten rid of its red line that it wouldn't go back into government until Arlene Foster had stood aside as First Minister. So I would imagine really that won't be a huge factor when it comes to deciding whether or not to go back into an executive with the DUP. But certainly it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that in terms of sustainability, in terms of transparency regarding any future executive, because we know some of the real criticism directed at the parties who were in that previous executive was that things were done under a cloak, things were done too often behind the scenes and rules weren't adhered to. So if they do get back in, I think there will be a bigger focus on how they do not get themselves back into a situation that they were in such a long time ago.
Jane, thank you.
No problem.
Go and have a think about those resolutions.
I'll come back to you with them, I promise.
030 30 80 55 55. That issue we're talking about this morning, do you want another Assembly election? Do you believe that if they do manage to get power sharing up and running again, it should be with the MLAs as they stand, the people that have those positions currently? Or do you want the chance to go back in, cast your vote and decide who takes up those seats? 030 30 80 55 55. Let's speak to the People Before Profit councillor and the former MLA, Eamon McCann. Good morning to you, Eamon.
Good morning.
And also the commentator, Nelson McCausland. Good morning to you, Nelson. Hopefully Nelson's there. We'll check his line.
Hello. Eamon,
good morning to you, Nelson. Sorry about that. Eamon, we'll start with you. You tweeted in recent days there should be no return to Stormont without an Assembly election. Parties which did nothing but manoeuvre for advantage for 3 wasted years should not automatically be handed back seats. Let the people speak. You know yourself, Eamon McCann, that people will hear that and say, you lost your seat as an MLA. You are clearly just trying to get back in there.
Well, if you look at it a wee bit more broadly, I would hope that people would accept that that's not the case. I mean, I'm drawing attention to what I believe are flaws in the present setup, and these are not confined, of course, to the constituency of Foyle. I mean, what I've said is sort of that here we have current members of the Assembly, although we haven't met now for over 3 years, I got members of the Assembly elected 3.5 or even more than 3.5 years ago. My question is whether they can fairly be taken to represent sort of the spread of opinion, the profile of opinion, which has now emerged. I think that there have been changes, very significant changes, in the makeup of the Assembly. That ought to be reflected in how we go forward. The idea that you simply take sort of the 85 MLAs who were elected some time ago, forget everything that happened in between and say, okay, lads and lasses, we just go back in and do it again. I think that whatever deal is done also should be put to the people before there is an election. It should be put to the people sort of in the form of an election. I mean, are the people to have any say in these things? Or are we to have, once again, secret or semi-secret negotiations, and then white smoke goes up? If that's not an inappropriate metaphor. The white smoke goes up and then we discover what has been decided, and we have got no say in it. And what is more, they've had the discussion all morning and yesterday and over the weekend, I mean, about the petition of concern. Now, there's something strange about this discussion, all of it about the petition of concern. It was designed to prevent nationalists dominating unionists or unionists dominating nationalists in their whole elaborate mechanism that ever how you deal with the situation where a measure of Stormont cannot support, you know, sort of in crude terms, a majority of nationalists and a majority of unionists. What happens, answer me, what happens if we have an election and it throws up an assembly, which is roughly speaking, unionist, nationalist, other, 30-30-30. 30% 30% and 30% maybe if you go is on the side. What then for your a petition of consent? How is that triggered? How do you ensure that one community doesn't dominate the other? If you have a significant wedge of people in there who are not registered in the Stormont as either union...
Okay, well, let's bring in Nelson to respond to that. What do you reckon?
Well, I don't tweet myself, but I did check out on the internet there the tweet that Eamon McCann had put out and then looked at all the comments that followed from that. And what struck me was the total diversity of opinion, the variety of opinion across the people who follow Eamon on Twitter. There were those who were saying, yes, bring on an election immediately. Great, let the people speak, as Eamon was putting it. There were others who were saying, oh, certainly not. Not another election. There were people who were saying that would be great. People before profit, Eamon's party could come forward and do better in an election. There were others who were saying, no, we need to deal with health, education issues.
What do you think, Nelson?
I think I would put myself at the moment in the position of most people who are waiting to see what emerges from these inter-party talks. Is there agreement at all? There is a widespread interest in that, and many people, I think, would be of the view that Eamon is jumping too far ahead.
Well, let's say I know we're looking into the future here, Nelson, but let's say that an agreement is reached and they can get power sharing back up and running. Do you believe that the MLAs, as they stand, should walk back in, that they should take up their roles as had been, or should there be another election?
Well, interesting enough, the assembly term was extended to 5 years to bring it in line with the 5 years at Westminster. So the intention would have been that the current assembly group, which has had 3 years of inactivity, would have another 2 years to run. And I think, generally speaking, I would put myself in the same position as the vast majority of people in Northern Ireland who are waiting to see what emerges from the talks rather than focusing on this. There's a lot of conversation taking place out there about political issues at the moment. I think that in the wake of the Westminster election, there's a lot of conversation taking place amongst political-minded people and others, but the focus is very much on waiting and seeing.
Given what some perceived as a poor election result in the general election for the DUP, do you think they would be concerned at an assembly level?
I think that the parties will probably be looking, both Sinn Féin and the DUP will be looking at this for a number of reasons and a number of ways. So, for example, it will be, as you say, how did we do at the Westminster election? How would that work out if it was replicated at an assembly election? They'd be trying to work out, will the assembly election, if there was one, follow roughly the same pattern? Will there be different factors, different influences? How would any deal influence the result of an election? Because an election, a forthcoming election, would obviously shape people's approach in the discussions that are now ongoing. A huge opposition within unionism to an Irish Language Act, that would actually constrain what any DUP negotiators might do or say in the current discussions. So all of those things will come into play. There will be also a concern from Sinn Féin about what impact would any election, non-election, direct rule, what would these things do in terms of impacting on the forthcoming Doyle election, where Sinn Féin have had poor results in the Republic over the last while. They'll be looking at that and saying, yes, how do these situations in Northern impact those south of the border?
Okay, again at home, what do you think this morning? Do you want that chance to go back to the polls, or would you be happy if there was an agreement for your MLAs to be as they currently stand? 0-30-30-80-55-55. Thomas, first call of the day. Good morning to you, Thomas.
Happy New Year to you, Vinny.
You too, go ahead.
I'd be happy to go to the voting polls every week if it made a difference to break the impasse that we've had this last 52 years. Because it's not just about orange and green. It's now about the parties who feed off hatred and division. They can't even agree what it's called. Is it the North of Ireland or Northern Ireland? And the parties who are willing to cooperate. And gradually, more and more people are wising up and voting for these middle ground politicians. And if Julian O'Neill doesn't get a proper sustainable agreement today, he should just call an election immediately.
If they reach an agreement, right, they're currently, the talks back up and running again today, cease before Christmas. And of course you mean Julian Smith, not Julian O'Neill, when you're referring to the the Secretary of State, as far as I'm aware anyway. If they get if they get an agreement, they get a deal, would you want the chance to decide who your MLA is?
I think I'm worried that any deal they will have will be like all the deals they've had since 1998.
So where do we go from here then, Thomas? If you don't have any confidence that they can either get a deal or a deal that you would be happy with, where do you want them to go?
I think an election. Brexit was a total stalemate, largely due to the hand of the DUP in Westminster, and we had a new parliament with a majority of the people spoke. Stormont has been in stalemate, not for 3 years, probably for 12 years. Give the people a chance to vote new MLAs in, good cooperation from the middle ground parties, and it will break the dam, it will break the impasse.
Okay.
Because we deserve better.
Thomas,
this is not good enough.
Thomas, thank you. Jim in West Belfast. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Vinny. Happy New Year, son.
You too. Go ahead.
Listen, I'll tell you what it is here. I think you need to look at the bigger picture here. Look at the dynamics behind the parties, the personalities. Arlene Foster, leader of the DUP, was running about Westminster, cock-a-hoop, which was propping up a Tory government. She's took her eye off the ball here in Northern Ireland. No longer is the DUP of any significance in Westminster. We're now back in Northern Ireland local politics. She is a liability. You have the RHR inquiry coming out. You have her remarks about the Irish language, the crocodiles. You have all her a plethora of things she has done in the past to antagonise the Nations Committee.
Well, I'm sure she would deny that it was done on purpose to antagonise.
Absolutely, she. Of course, she's not. But I'm entitled to my opinion, as are everyone else. In the north of Ireland.
Of course, to be fair as well, if you look at the general election, people will say that Sinn Féin, yes, that North Belfast seat that they were vying for, but in terms of their vote across the board went down, and therefore well,
that was the most positive result, Jim. That was the point I was going to make. Let me finish. The vote here has went down for both parties. However, the biggest fear for the DUP is that if they do go to an election, for the first time ever in the Northern Ireland political history, Sinn Féin and Nations could come back as the biggest parties in the north of Ireland. And that would not sit well with unionism. I think personally, I think Arlene Foster, her days are numbered. I think she will go at some stage in the next 4 to 6 months. I think the upper echelons in the DUP know this here and know that she's not a vote winner here. The petition of concern is important to the DUP because it then gives them a leverage of control over Sinn Féin and the Nations communities. My personal opinion, the petition of concern should go. It's no good. It's proven in the past no good for the LGBT.
Okay, let's just get Nelson's thoughts on that, Jim. Stay there if you can. Nelson.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure that the result of an assembly election would be that much different in terms of the relative positions of the parties. As you rightly pointed out to the caller, the impact of Westminster election, there was a greater drop there in terms of Sinn Féin vote than there was the DUP vote, so both parties would probably take something of a hit. The gentleman talked there about Arlene Foster. Unionists would probably respond by saying, well, the position for Michelle O'Neill isn't as strong as it might have been following the contest for their party.
Total deflection.
They would also say probably that Mary Lou MacDonald is under considerable pressure because of her election results.
Can I ask Nelson a question, please?
Just let him finish and then, of course, you can. Yeah. Nelson, you finish your point if you can.
Okay. So I think there are factors at work on both sides of that discussion.
Jim?
Nelson, I noticed in your reply to me, you totally deflected what I was saying. I would like to ask you, you're a DUP man, you've got an inside ear on what's going on in the DUP.
I do not have any more inside ear probably than
me. You have a better insight than me, son. You have a far better insight than me. So my question to you is, and I would ask you, Arlene Foster, could you say to yourself, do you think she has the position and the strength and the respect within the DUP to be still be holding that position in the next 6 months?
Well, the gentleman who poses that question raised earlier on the issue of RHI and clearly is a person who has almost prejudged it.
Well, that's not on this programme.
And that,
I didn't prejudge anything. I'm asking you. I didn't answer.
Can I be allowed to speak, please? Thank you. I think there we should do the right thing, and that is wait until we get the outcome of the RHI report. Because there are a lot of issues, I think, that will emerge from that. It will have implications not just for politicians, but also for civil servants.
So
there are a lot of people there who will come in to play on that.
Jim?
Nelson, I asked you, after all, the DUP are a very, very strong political party in the north of Ireland. Nobody can deny that there. They have a long history of being a very strong party. I'm asking you, Arlene Foster, as the leader of your party, do you think, and please just answer the question rather than going off on a tangent about other parts of the political system here, do you think that Arlene's leadership in Northern Ireland is in question in the next 6 months? Because I personally think it is, and so do a lot of countries. I'm asking you now.
Okay. Nelson, you get the point that Jim is trying to make.
Well, I understand the point that the gentleman's making.
You must have some insight in terms of the party and confidence behind its current leader.
I have made the point since the Westminster election that I haven't heard within the DUP some great demand for a change of party leader. I have heard from within the party conversations about how the party needs to improve its structure, how it needs to improve its communication. I've heard issues like that being discussed, because those are the key issues, really. But I haven't heard so much of that conversation that the gentleman seems to focus on.
Okay, Fred in Lisburn next. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning and happy new year to you all.
You too.
I've got a couple of quick points here. Number one, we have tried so many times with the Assembly to get it up and running, try and get it working. If our politicians fail this time, then we have two choices. One, go to an election, which isn't really going to work on both sides, because people will be manipulated again into voting either orange or green. The other option is that the Secretary of State imposes direct rule. And for give you a quick example, the likes of same-sex marriage and abortion, which I am totally in favour of and have no problem with, that was passed through Westminster. But yet, the five main parties turned round before Christmas. No portion of blame to any side. The five of them all got together, signed a joint letter to the Secretary of State saying we cannot sort the likes of the health service and nurses out for parity of pay and safe working rights. So, if the five of them sign a letter like that just before Christmas, how are they going to get together and help this country? We have got to put our religious beliefs, our...
Yeah, but I understand the point you're trying to make, Fred, in terms of how many vote the orange and green lines. But at the end of the day, when you go to cast your vote, it's down to you who to vote for. We all get told the same information, you know, in terms of electioneering, what is out there. And we then are allowed to make that decision ourselves. So if we choose to vote for the same people, the same parties every time, then that is that not democracy?
In a lot of areas, it is democracy. In a lot of areas, it's not. People with disabilities have problems voting. People who live in certain areas are forced to vote whether they like it or not. And we have seen the problems with the electoral...
Well, let's let Eamon McCann respond to that. Eamon, I know you've been holding on the line for a while there. You hear from Fred, he basically thinks that there's not much point in going to vote because people are going to do the same thing. We're going to end up in that merry-go-round and not move forward.
Well, I suppose my brief answer to that would be, says who? I mean, it's up for the electorate to decide that. I think that there have been indications of quite significant shifts sort of in the way people intend to vote. I don't regard it as absolutely inevitable that, you know, forever and a day, people in Northern Ireland are simply going to be herded in behind an orange flag or a green flag into the polling stations. We're far better than that, and that's being shown. I mean, maybe we've seen a significant decrease in the votes for the two main parties, which are the more strident, shall we say, representatives of the nationalist and the unionist parties, respectively. And everybody listening sort of will know, at least by anecdotage, sort of, I mean, that there is sort of a decreasing belief in this sort of endless head-butting match between Sinn Féin
Believe, Eamon, that so much has changed since the last Assembly election that it would make a huge difference? The outcome would be that much different? Because let's not forget, as Nelson said, it's a five-year term. It's been almost three, actually, since the last Assembly election. And there's a cost implication here as well whenever we have an election. We pay for that.
Yeah, well, it's a big cost implication, I would have thought, of not having an election either. And incidentally, I mean, as you say, that this Assembly session hasn't run sort of its full length. But the reason why it was supposed to last 5 years and not 4 years, the reason why that change was made was, as you said, to bring it into line with Westminster. Well, what's it in line with at Westminster now? It's not 5 years since we had a Westminster election. We're having them every run, every whip about, it would appear, sort of under maybe others. But look, sort of, the one fundamental point is that everybody mentions education and the health service and so on. We must get Stormont back up and running in order to deal with these matters. How are we going to deal with them? Do the parties have policies on this? Are there plans? What are the proposals for reforming the health service? And can we have a public debate about that? Or are we simply to say, well, just get these guys and women back into a Stormont, and then whatever they produce, we'll all sit down and start discussing these things. And keep in mind, too, that the significant changes that we've seen in the North are not just about party politics, although they will be directly reflected eventually in party politics. We have seen, you know, over the last week, you mentioned, who has brought sort of the issue of health service reform, the need for money, sort of, and pay across the public sector. What has brought that into the centre of politics? It's got nothing to do with what has happened in Stormont. It is the mobilisation of working class people themselves. I mean, who are doing that? And incidentally, one last little thing in this, another significant change in recent times has been precisely sort of on the woman's right to choose and on equal marriage. Those changes did not come about through Stormont. They came about through sort of mass mobilisation in the North that we got somebody to move in Westminster and get the thing done.
Okay.
So the options are not simply to stand back and watch what happens in these inter-party talks and then sort of quietly and without reservation accept whatever they bring forward. Bring it all out then. Bring RHA out in the open. It may well be, so the last couple of words, sorry, it may well be that when the RHA report comes out, that one party leader will not have...
Let's not preempt the outcome of that inquiry. Let's wait until it comes out, because it's not down to us. Eamon McCann, if you can stay there, and Nelson, if you can stay there as well. 030-30-80-55-55. Gary, next. Good morning to you, Gary.
Morning, Billy. Happy New Year to you all.
Same to you, Gary.
I rung in and I heard Jim's question. Can he see Arlene Foster being... the leader of the UP or the labour union is in 6 months? Well, I would say yes, because I can see nobody on the horizon that will lead unionism. I have every confidence in Arlene Foster. You know, and let's remember who clapped Stormont and who was asked by all the other parties, including the SDLP, the Alliance and the Ulster Unionists, to go back into Stormont for the last 3 years. And let's have a look at the Westminster election results.
Let's look at what happened before Christmas, and the Secretary of State that laid the blame of why the talks hadn't led to an agreement at the door of the DUP.
And I was going to come to that, and I would pose three questions to the Secretary of State. Who clapped Stormont originally? Who refused, as I said, despite requests from all the other parties, to go back in and make it work? And who...
There were red lines on both sides. Now, you might call it something else than red lines, but there were, whether it was equal marriage or whether it was an Irish Language Act.
Right, well, let's look at Sinn Féin's Irish Language Act and the answer they got from the nationalist people in the Westminster election there. You look at the Eamon City there of Londonderry, a 15,000 majority, and on the doorstep, Alicia McCallion, we're being told... was told in no uncertain terms, and this included the SDLP telling us that Irish language wasn't a priority, that health, education and infrastructure was. And then you go to Eamon's party there in West Belfast, and Jerry Carroll, they're raising his vote and the fallen Sinn Féin vote, and the same message being given to Sinn Féin on the doorstep, that Irish language wasn't a priority, and it's not a priority. It can be dealt with.
But again, it's them and us and pointing the blame. You're talking about the decrease in Sinn Féin. Well, hold on, let me make my point. The decrease in Sinn Féin's vote, I'm looking at the DUP vote share in the general election. It's down 5.4%, Sinn Féin down 6.7%. So was a message being sent from the electorate to both parties?
To both parties, yes, absolutely. To get back in, I've said this before, message being sent to both parties to get back in and make Stormont work with no red lines whatsoever.
Okay.
And anything, be it health, and Eamon asked, was there policies on infrastructure and was there policies on health? No, as far as I can see, there's no policy that's joined up between the parties.
Tell me this, Gary. Right,
we worked within Stormont.
We've talked about the Irish Language Act many times on this programme, and indeed this morning. And Jean McCormick said that it's her understanding that a deal might be on the horizon, if not already made, with the DUP. How would you feel if that was true?
Well, I don't want, because I don't think we need a standalone Irish Language Act. If you look, and we had a study or a survey, and the public got the figures that the money has been already spent on Irish language. I'm sure Nelson there, if he's still there, would have figures, and that would be in a ballpark figure. So the amount of money being already spent on it, I would say, is astronomical.
So would you be disappointed if the DUP had reached a deal and an Irish Language Act in some form was on the cards?
Well, Vinny, negotiations are always about compromise, and nobody's ever going to get everything they want. So I am satisfied, and I accept that something around Irish language is going to have to be agreed on for all the parties to go back in now.
Well, okay. Nelson McCausland, again, we are talking hypothetical to an extent here, but you can give us some insight in terms of the DUP and how they would sell that to the people that vote for them.
Well, I think people would reflect back to a previous round of discussions between the parties and the difficulties that there were in coming to a reasonable accommodation about cultural matters. Ultimately, an Irish Language Act is not about the Irish language as such. It's a point that I made in a newspaper article today that for Sinn Féin, you can look back at Gerry Adams' comment that really this is about identity. It is a project to affirm, assert an Irish identity. And what we need is a holistic approach to cultural issues whereby all our various cultural traditions and cultural identities are given a fair and equitable...
So are you suggesting then an Ulster Scots type act? Or
I'm thinking that what we need, two things. First of all, I think we need an audit, a cultural audit, because a lot of things are being done at the moment that people are not aware of. Huge amounts of money being invested, particularly in the Irish language, I have to say, which are concealed, which are not out there transparently in the public domain. And I don't think anybody could reasonably object to there being a cultural law that, which is about not only the money, it's also about things like...
I'm just trying to understand the point of that. What do you believe would be the point of that audit? To prove what's already spent at present, never mind the future?
Because if you're going into look at any issue, what you want is the phrase that's used today, the buzz phrase, I suppose, is that you make your decision on the basis of evidence. It's evidence-based. And we need the evidence. We need to know. And there's been, I think, a reluctance by Sinn Féin activists and by Irish language activist organisations to be open and transparent about that.
Okay.
And secondly, once you've got the evidence, what you need then is a public conversation and a political conversation about how we create a shared and better future in Northern Ireland for all cultural traditions, whether that be Irish, whether that be Ulster Scots, whether that be Orange, whatever it might be, that all those cultural traditions are given a fair deal. But it has to be on the basis of that evidence. And I think that we are lacking the evidence at the moment.
And in that cultural audit that you referenced, we can look at the Belfast Telegraph today, and you've written about the BBC and what they spend on Irish language, Ulster Scots and the Orange tradition. You want to see how that is split up there?
I think it's something that stretches way beyond simply pounds and pence. It's looking at commitment, investment, support. What are our universities doing in terms of supporting cultural traditions?
But money does come into it, though, yes?
Money, of course, is a factor, because if you employ people, there are wages to pay. But I gave an example there of how Sinn Féin went into the Hillsborough Castle talks, walked away with an £8 million pot of money to build cultural centres. And when you look at the leverage, that drew in another £16 million of public money. So that's £24 million in buildings, which are now receiving revenue funding from various public sources. Most people are not aware of the level of investment, or most people are not aware even of the level of commitment that would be required under an Irish Language Act or under, indeed, a Cultural Act. So clarity, evidence-based,
and an inclusive, okay, holistic approach that's fair.
And I know I don't mean to make it sound like it's a black and white issue, because I understand that it's not, but is it basically coming down to the amount of money that is spent on Irish language, for example, and if that was maybe equaled or bumped up on the other side towards, for example, Orange traditions?
No, that would be...
To make it more acceptable to the DP voter, for example.
No, I think what people are looking at is a fair deal whereby all our cultural traditions and identities fair treatment. That's about more than resources. It's also
I understand that, but surely if you want this audit in the first place, you know, the what is the end goal if not to say, well, look, here is the pie, this is how it is split up, and maybe you believe that it is unfairly divided and therefore there should be changes made. That's kind of the implication, surely, from what you're saying.
I'm making the point that this is a much bigger thing than money is part of it. Money is a part of most things.
Okay.
But the truth is that what we need is a place in Northern Ireland where people feel that their identity is fairly treated and that they are not being discriminated against.
But you must feel like they are at this point if you want this audit in the first place.
Well, the first thing is that there's been no transparency. There's been no openness. We need to have that. Any attempts to get openness and transparency seem to quite often run into the ground, because it is a very complex issue. Unless you're right embedded there in government, you would not have immediate access to all the information. But the information that has become available shows that there are streams of support, projects, initiatives that are not.
Okay, Eamon McCam, your thoughts there on a cultural audit?
Well, I'm not quite sure what a cultural audit would mean.
Nelson spelt it out there for you. He wants to see how things are provided for, what resources are there.
In terms of money, yes.
No, and much broader than that.
Well, look, you know, sir, we're talking about these things, the cultural audits and so forth, for one side and the other. Are we going to have that loyalist unionist culture treated equally, that it was nationalist, a Republican or a Catholic a culture? Are we going to strike sort of a proper balance between those two things? Now, I would say the first is, I don't think sort of that the general public, that there is sort of a real problem here. I mean, I know sort of that there are many people who are not just Protestants, but of a unionist a frame of mind, who will tell you sort of they have no problem with an Irish Language Act. And that includes, incidentally, elected members of the DUP. They would tell you, we have no problem with it. It's not a big issue. People do not bring this up sort of to the extent that's reflected in the a public conversation. You know, and I also think that somebody just said there, you know, the election, people will just be led into the orange and green camps again. There's no reason this should be inevitable. Are people saying that this is sort of natural, normal in Northern Ireland, that we can't escape it? That forever and more and more, we are going to be sort of striped orange and green in Northern Ireland? I don't believe so. I think that people are changing, and I think that was reflected in the results of the local government election and of the Westminster election. There is a shift underway, and it's not been taken into account sort of in negotiations or conversations about negotiations, which seem to be confined, that are almost confined to what effect a particular measure would have on the orange or the green vote.
Well, Nelson McCausland, just
more to our people.
Okay, Nelson, just so I have it straight in my head, and we're referring to orange and green in terms of culture. What about people that don't believe they belong to either of those labels, and in terms of their culture and what that audit, should they be involved in it as well?
Well, it would be wrong, I think, to express this in the terms in which Eamon has thought to do it there, in terms of orange and green. You can talk about orange flags and green flags, but in his case, suppose it's more of a red flag. But what we're looking at here are cultural expressions, how they're endorsed. It's obviously something that's very important to Sinn Féin, because they've held the country to ransom, really, for 3 years over this issue. So it's clearly very important to them. It's important that we get it right, because one of the difficulties is that cultural issues were not dealt with properly in the Belfast Agreement. It was deeply flawed. It embedded disadvantage and discrimination. And it's important that those things are now dealt with and put right. The way forward in Northern Ireland has to be on the basis of what I learned many years ago in the Community Relations Council: equity, diversity, interdependence. How do you create a society where we respect differences, whether they be cultural or whatever? How do you do it in a fair way, an equitable way? And how do you at the same time seek to build social cohesion in our society? That challenge has never been properly addressed.
By our own politicians.
I think the structure that was set up by the Belfast Agreement was flawed in that regard. It made a series of very substantial commitments to one cultural tradition that ignored all the others. And that has created, I think, a great deal of resentment down through the years that has never been properly recognised or resolved.
Okay, 030-30-80-55-55. Eamon McCann and Nelson McCausland, thank you very much. Back to the phones now. Margaret, good morning to you.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead, Margaret.
Why do we need an Irish Act? If I want to learn Irish, I can go to night school.
So you believe that's just it? You don't think that the people that do believe in it, the people that, for example, voted for Sinn Féin because of their stance on it, do you think they're wrong or should be ignored?
I neither vote orange or green. I read the manifestos. I walk up the White Rock Road and I get the Sinn Féin manifesto and I bring it home and read it. I go up the Gervocky Road and I do the same thing there. You know, I vote for what I think.
Do you want another election? Do you want an assembly election if they do reach a deal?
Can you see them reaching a deal? If they reach a deal, that's fair enough. But I think if they don't reach a deal, it's time we had another election.
Okay. And would you change how you voted the last time in another assembly election?
I don't think so. I would need to read the manifestos again and see which one is best for me. I'm long in the tooth, so I am. And I have a very complex family history. And I'm not going to go right away back to the 1920s when my mother was born in Dublin. My grandmother, they all lived in Dublin,
okay,
but had to come up. So I'm not going back into that.
No, well, that's fine. But what you're saying is you would want another election, although you wouldn't change how you would vote. So I assume from that, Margaret, that what you think is other people would and the outcome would be different.
I don't think it would change.
Okay, Margaret, thank you very much. Jenny in Belfast next. Good morning, Jenny.
Hi, Vinny. I definitely don't think we should have another election. There's the cost. Nothing ever changes. The two parties don't get in. And I'm telling you, you asked a question, you know, where should they go if they don't reach an agreement? Well, I'm telling you, I'd like them to go out into the wilderness and just get lost. And I'm wondering why Westminster are evading direct rule, because if they cannot reach an agreement this week, please God they do. If they can't, you know, I think we really need to look to Westminster now to come and sort this place out. And most people do not have a problem with an Irish Language Act. And if that's what's holding everything up and it's, you know, affecting the health service and everything else.
And you would be happy with direct rule, would you?
I think at the moment, yes, we need it. Because look at what's going on. We've got the strike, all the things you've been talking about. Let's not go over and over and over. The welfare thing, that needs to be sorted out. And, you know, this man saying about the Sinn Féin have held everybody to ransom over the Irish Language Act. Well, sure, that's right, but they've allowed them to. Because it is time for Ireland to go. We need a modern, softer face for the DUP. And Michelle O'Neill...
Do you vote for the DUP?
Michelle O'Neill needs to wind her neck in as well. I'm a moderate person. I'm
okay.
Not one side or the other.
But are you a DUP voter?
I'm not saying he'll vote for.
No, the reason I ask is I understand that, you know, if you want the party you believe in, if you want them to have a different leader, I can understand then why you would maybe you would want that. But if you don't vote for them, if you don't feel they represent you, you know, why should they listen to you?
Anybody? I don't think they represent anybody because there's been too much. This other man's talking about an audit, you know. There needs to be an order into blooming everything. I'd like to know where all this money went that we got or the Brexit deal and why the money isn't there to pay the health workers. You know, I'm just a moderate person in the middle. I consider myself British and Irish. I think this is a fantastic place to live and I just think it's an absolute shame, you know, that we've got two parties bickering. There's so much to do and there's so much opportunity here. This film industry, this tourism industry, there's jobs waiting in the making. And, you know, What's the point in having another election? It will just be the same old, and they'll just be bickering.
Well, there was some difference in the general election, the result that came out there. You know, I'm sure you're well aware of it. So perhaps some will say that suggests if there was an assembly election, there could be a difference in the outcome there too.
Well, what do you think? It'll just be the same different numbers, won't it?
Okay, Jenny, thank you. Sam, next. Good morning, Sam.
Morning, Bunny.
Good morning to you. Go ahead. What do you reckon?
I think we need new faces and new people in Stormont, because if you don't turn up for work for 3 years, you'd be sacked. So I think an election is not only necessary, but inevitable.
Okay, Sam, thank you. Pastor Paul Burns next. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning, Finny. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I keep thinking it's Monday, but it's not.
Happy New Year to you, by the way, and all those.
Same to you.
My point is this. I'm a minister, so therefore I'm neutral. I'm not in any political party. But really, you know, when I go into hospitals, that's the first point I want to say. I see nurses working. They're working with families. They see births, but they also see deaths. They see families going through hell and back. Now, they've had to clean up beds. They clean up sick. They do a wonderful job. Now, we need to sort this problem out in our health service. That's one of the major problems. But see this blame going. All of the MLAs have responsibility. They haven't been there for 3 years. I'm speaking as a minister. I see it on the streets. They were the ones that passed the parity of the salaries that our people find themselves in the problem at the moment, where they're falling behind the UK. It was a collective responsibility. All of our political parties took that. So to say one party is to blame doesn't work for me. I see the damage. At Christmas there, and I have to be careful what I say, Santa Claus got a little bit of help from all my colleagues to help families that were struggling. The same with food hampers. But let's just put a wee point out here. Out there in society, we have parents, mothers and fathers, struggling to pay mortgages and rent and putting food on the table for their kids. And they're making choices to fall behind in their rents and facing sometimes evictions because they're not getting enough assistance. There's legislation coming in from Westminster and has been brought in with a new benefit system, which is affecting families. We need to get people back who can make decisions politically. But I heard Emma McCann talking.
But let's not forget, though, Pastor, that some of those problems, those issues, will relate back to when the assembly was up and running and when there was a functioning Stormont.
That is correct, Finney, and that is why we need them to get back in to correct the problems that exist, because they've got worse from where they were. I see it on the streets. My colleagues see it on the streets. But I want to take a wee point with Eamon. Eamon says, you know, direct rule solved the problem in the gay marriage issue and also in the abortion issue. Now, did it really solve it? I'm a minister of religion. I am going to be put in a position, because I stand on what I believe the Bible is, if I preach something, I could possibly end up in prison along with my colleagues. So how do Westminster protect my human rights as a citizen of Northern Ireland, the United Kingdom, and being British Irish?
I believe on that grounds there's still consultation underway.
I know that, Finny, but I'm just pointing that out to Eamon because he said it solved the problem. Okay. What about the thousands of people, including young people, who were up at Stormont and also marched in the March for Life? That has to be decided by the people of Northern Ireland, not over a two-hour debate over Brexit, because let's get this right. The reason they passed that legislation was nothing to do about the love of Northern Ireland and human rights. It was to bring a Westminster government by then Boris Johnson back every 2 weeks to count on Northern Ireland how things were progressing. And he used Brexit as a tool. He used the life of a child or the life of the unborn as a tool to try and stop Brexit happening. Now, regardless of whatever way you look at it politically, that's not on. That's not democracy. We have to sort our own problems out in Northern Ireland. And I'm saying that as a minister. And if the people of Northern Ireland vote, and vote in a way that the church might disagree with, we have to respect that issue and still be allowed to even put across our own point of democracy.
All right, we'll
have to. Not enforced upon us.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there, Pastor Paul Burns. Thank you very much.